Hey, everybody. My name is Alan Garcia, and I am a very, very grateful recovering addict and alcoholic. And I appreciate the opportunity to come out, and early happy Thanksgiving to everybody, and I hope I do better tonight than my Cowboys did today. Because that was not pretty. So, you know, guys, if anything, I really, really would hope that not so much that you guys learn anything about me from my story tonight, but hopefully something I say gets you to look inside at your story and to take a look where you're at right now and the person that you're becoming. And is that who you want to see every day? And, you know, the power that each one of us has, not only to change ourselves, but to be a change in the world. And hopefully that's what happens tonight. You guys get a little bit of something out of this that makes you kind of take a moment to look at your story and see if maybe you want to rewrite the ending, because it's not over. It's not over, you know, and for a long, long time, I thought mine was. I thought that the ending was predestined, and that turns out to not be the case, and I'm really glad about that. I found through this program and through the 12 steps, I found a way out, and one of the very first things I read in the book. And I would not have kept reading if I hadn't read this really simple statement. There is a solution. And at the beginning of this book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program that I went through to find my recovery, it says that we are 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Past tense, recovered. And that gave me some hope, and I did not have any hope before that. So just to tell you a little bit about myself, you know, addiction and alcoholism do not discriminate. You don't have to come from a broken family. You don't have to come from a poor background. It doesn't discriminate against color of your skin, your socioeconomic background. Doesn't discriminate against whether you have a mother and father that love you and support you and gave you everything that you ever wanted and needed or not. And I'm pretty much that case. I came from a very upper middle class family. Dad was chasing the American dream, and that was to live a life that was better than his parents and then to pass on that dream to his kids and give us the opportunity to live a life that was, quote unquote, better than the life that they lived. And unfortunately, I think now, especially in today's day and age, we get caught up in this whole thing about what is a better life. You know, they were chasing comforts and an easier, softer way. More comforts, a bigger house, a nicer car, things like that that I bought into early on that was supposed to be my goals. Because one of the very first things that I was addicted to, it turns out, was approval. So before I ever started drinking, before I ever started smoking pot, before I ever started experimenting with drugs, the thing that I was addicted to was you liking me. I wanted you to like me. I wanted you to approve of me. I wanted you to put me in high esteem. And as it turns out, every time that I gave you the power to do that, I was taking it from myself. And then I started to experiment in some other things to do like we all do, to fit in, to be doing something that's different that connects us. You know, that's the funny thing is, you know, I ended up being so disconnected at the end, isolated and alone. And all I was ever seeking when I first started doing the drugs and started smoking pot and drinking was the connection. I wanted to be with my friends, and I wanted to be doing something that connected me with them. And I wanted it to be something that was different than everybody else was doing. You know, I grew up with a lot of drinking in the family. We get together for family reunions, there was drinking going on. For weddings, there was drinking going on. For funerals, there was drinking going on. For football games, there was drinking going on. I mean, you know, Cowboys win, I was drinking. Cowboys lose, I was drinking. Cowboys weren't playing, I was drinking. I mean, you know. And so that's just what you did. You know, we got holidays coming up, Thanksgiving. How many of y'all sat at the kids' table? And when you were little, right? I hated that. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be an adult. You know, you get older, you want to sit at the adult table. I sit at the kids' table now. I found my home. But you know, being an adult was something that I craved. I wanted to fit in with that crowd. We would get together, and my cousins and my older brothers. I have three older brothers, and a lot of cousins, aunts and uncles. And when we would get together for family events, they would be sharing about, you know, these drinking stories from the last time we got together. And they were like war stories. They were these bonds that bonded them together, you know. Hey, you remember last time we snuck you into the club, and You threw up all over Cousin Jimmy, you know. You know, and it was just these things that, and they got all the sex jokes, and I didn't understand any of those, and I still don't, half of them. But, you know, I wanted to fit in. I wanted to have those stories for myself. And again, little did I know that as I was giving this power away, how hard it was going to be to get that power back. And so growing up, before I started smoking pot, which was my first dabble into drugs and alcohol, and that was my drug of choice, and I was 15 years old. And before that, I was a straight-A student. And I don't mean like I had a really good grade average. I didn't make anything below an A from kindergarten through the end of my sophomore year in high school. Straight A's. I almost flunked out my junior year. And my parents never said a thing, because they lived in this really awesome state that I ended up in called denial. I remember sitting on my back porch with my friends the summer of the year we started smoking pot together, all of us. And we were, we had a ping pong table on the back patio. And we're sitting there, skip school. We're getting high. My mom was at work, supposed to be there till like 4 o'clock, and it's only like 2. I look up because I see something move at the sliding glass door, you know, and here I am. What's that? It's mom looking out the curtain. I turn around to tell my friends that we got to go. My friends were already gone. I see their sneakers as they're jumping over the fence in the backyard, heading down to my friend's house two houses down, which, of course, I ended up following them down there. And then the phone starts ringing, and I'm like, Chuck, don't answer. Hello? Yes, Mrs. Garcia, he's right here. I'm like, oh, dude, really? It's my mom. So come on home. Go home. She takes me into her room, sits me down at the end of the bed, and says, I can't believe you let those kids do that in our house. And just never said a thing about me or my behavior, because I'm the perfect child. Well, in her mind. And, you know, that pattern continued. I would get in trouble. There weren't a lot of consequences at first. I say that. Giving up on your dreams, probably a pretty big consequence. Almost flunking out of school, yeah, it's probably a pretty big consequence. Feeling that you're a failure, probably a pretty big consequence. But nothing legal, nothing, you know, that was going to make me look at the fact that I was taking these huge dreams that I had here, the things that I wanted to accomplish, and shrinking them down to like this so I wouldn't feel so bad that I wasn't chasing them anymore. Because I found something else that I wanted to chase instead. And that was this awesome feeling of being high and being buzzed. And I just thought that that was something that was worthwhile. And there were, as I progressed through, there were many times when I had opportunities and blessings came my way and opportunities to stop that and to go back to living a life that I wanted, but I didn't know that I wanted. And you see, one of the things that I bought into early on because of this whole need to have your approval was I wanted to chase the dreams that you had for me. So I didn't really know what the dreams were that I had for myself. And so a lot of those dreams were easy to give up on because they weren't something that came from my heart. And at a time in my life when I should have been getting in touch with what those things were, I was out getting high instead. Yeah, you know, there's that sitcom called Arrested Development. That was me, man. My development arrested. I was 15 years old for the next 38 years. You know, and it doesn't have to be that way. You know, and hopefully that's something that you guys can get out of this is that you can make a choice and you can make a different choice for yourself. And you can stop. And it's just as simple as that. It's a choice. I almost flunked out of high school. Stayed up in the panhandle of Texas after graduating. And basically didn't want to go to continue my education. My dad had always told me he would pay for me to go to college if I moved back home. And I didn't want to do that. They moved in my senior year. I was 17. And I said, see you later. Have a good life. And decided that I was going to continue in the career that I had chosen, which was aircraft mechanic. I was learning how to fly airplanes and thought that I was accomplished because I could control a plane flying through the sky. And fast forward about a year and a half later, decided that, no, I need to get an education. Call up dad, will you still pay for school if I move home? He says, sure, but I don't think you're going to really be able to get in. You almost flunked out. You know, and says, well, let me go take my entrance exams. If I get in, you know, we'll talk about it then. And so not only did I get in, but I got in with some credits already. Moved home, and it turns out that I do really well when I have structure. When I have somebody watching over me. Went to Temple Junior College for a couple years, and I was on the dean's list for the whole time. Transferred to UT to here to Austin, and turns out that I don't do well when I don't have structure. And all of those dreams that I started having again and again, they were dreams that my dad had for me. I went back to school because I wasn't getting his approval being an aircraft mechanic up in Plainview, Texas. I wasn't fulfilling the dreams that I knew that he had for my life. And it made me feel bad. And so I can see all of that now, but I never took the time back then to look at it. So I move up to Austin, start going to school, working as a teller at the bank, and I start skipping classes. I start getting back into the party scene pretty heavy. You know, this alcoholism is a progressive disease, and yeah, marijuana was definitely my drug of choice, but alcohol is what really burned all of my bridges. As I continued to party more and party more and party more and not going to school, not going to classes, and trying to figure out how I'm going to tell my dad one of these days that you're sending me this money for classes and I'm not going. Turns out I didn't have to tell him because he found out after I got arrested for embezzling money from the bank because I decided that I needed to buy a whole bunch of marijuana and start selling it. And so I borrowed some money from my till and, of course, not only did I not get any money to put it back, because monkeys don't do really well selling bananas. They tend to eat them and give them to their friends because your friends will approve of you when you do that. Oh, yay. Approval, my drug of choice. They will like you. And so I went into the bank one day, and I was actually the head teller in the drive-thru. I had six tellers under me, and I got called into the office and to the main bank. And I went into my boss's office, and there were two police officers in there waiting for me, put me in handcuffs, walked me out in front of all my friends, and locked me up, and I had to call Dad to come and get me. It was the first time I ever saw my father in tears. And nobody ever asked me why I took the money. Dad thought it was in order for me to pay him back for the tuition that I had been spending, drinking away. And, so nobody ever asked me about what I used the money for, and I sure as heck never volunteered it. I got deferred adjudication, and so that went away, and I never got drug tested. I never had a piss test. Nobody knew anything about the drugs. 21 years old, and that would have been a great opportunity for me to get sober and to start finding out how I was throwing away my life. But that didn't happen. And so, as it happens, fast forward, more opportunities come my way. I end up with an opportunity to go into business with a neighbor who ends up being a good friend. Bought him out after 7 years and got married, a couple of kids, and again, alcoholism is a progressive disease. I had slowed down. I was doing the thing that it says in the book, weekends only, only after 5 o'clock. It ended up pretty soon being only days that end in Y, and it was me going, why did I do it again? Why can't I quit? Why can't I control this? I thought I just had a lack of self-control. And I did, especially when it came to being faithful to my now ex-wife. And so instead of this beautiful definition of what happiness is, which is a progressive realization of a worthwhile dream or goal, I had the opposite of that. I had the realization of a progressive disease that took all of my control. And you couldn't have told me that I had this disease because I would have never bought into it. You couldn't have told me that I was powerless because I own my own business. That's not powerless. I can fly an airplane. I built one in my garage. That's not powerless. I got money in the bank. I can go party with my friends anytime I want to. That's not powerless. I got two kids that I would rather go party with my friends than go with them on vacation down to the beach with their mother where they love to go. Maybe that's powerlessness. I can't be faithful to a woman who is completely faithful to me. Maybe that's powerlessness. And I can't, eventually, I can't not drink until I'm blacked out. Maybe that's powerlessness. So, fast forward, because it's pretty much what it seemed like. And 2.5 years ago, at 53 years old, I had been divorced for a little over 3 years. Living in a house that I built because I thought that if I just gave my then wife and kids a new home, a nicer car, put through money at them, that the problems would all go away. You know, it asks us in the book to get down to causes and conditions, right? Well, I didn't want the causes to go away. I just wanted the conditions to change. It doesn't quite work that way. Well, I was doing what I always do, and I was drinking at the club to blackout. And I was there because that's where I got all of my approval from all my friends. I would walk in, and it was like Norm coming back into the Cheers bar. It was like, Alan, and I got all my hugs, and I got all my kisses, and I got the approval that I had been seeking my whole life. And the reason I had been seeking it outside of myself was because I didn't approve of myself. You know, that whole time you could have looked at me on the outside and saw somebody that, you know, maybe that guy's got something that I want. Well, I promise you, you didn't. So I left the club that night, March the 6th of 2016, and I should have never been behind the wheel. And I remember sneaking past the door girl because I knew she would grab the manager to make me get a ride home. And I didn't want to call my 19-year-old daughter the next day to have her come take Dad to the bar to pick up his car again, because he got so drunk he couldn't drive again. And the next thing I remember is seeing some really bright lights in my face. And I heard this voice kind of distant, and I was like, oh, well, I guess you go on after you die. There's that bright light that everybody was talking about. And then I finally realized that the voice was telling me to roll over this way so that they could take the MRI and see if my back was messed up on this side. Apparently, I'd been having a conversation with the doctor this whole time. And before that, I had a conversation with a police officer at the scene, because I still don't remember that, but there's video evidence of it. And when he asked me, Mr. Garcia, do you think that alcohol might have had something to do with the accident? And, of course, it's my truth serum. So I said, yeah, probably. So they took my blood alcohol level in the hospital, or took my blood, and my BAC was a 0.24. And I don't have a clue how long after I left the club that was. And I would absolutely love to tell you guys that I didn't ever drink again after that day. But that would be a fabrication of the truth, because I drank for another almost 18 months after that. And I continued to drink to blackout. Had 9 months of going to court, still drinking. Had an attorney who is a client of mine and a good friend, and I couldn't tell him the truth. I lied to him about how much I had been drinking. Here's a guy who can help me out, and I can't tell him the truth of what's going on. I get 15 months of probation. How I got probation, I'll never know. I got an interlock device in my car, and because I cannot tell anybody the truth, I didn't let them know that I have a truck at home too. So I would drive around all day long going to appointments and blowing in this little thing, and then get home, jump in my truck, and drive to the bar because I didn't want to drink at home alone. And of course, if I couldn't make it to the bar, it didn't stop me. I did drink at home alone. And I would go to the club and I would start counting my drinks, and you know, I knew I had to go to this alcohol awareness class, and so I kind of knew, you know, okay, well, I weigh this much, if I drink this many per hour, you know. If I get pulled over and I'm driving a vehicle that doesn't have an interlock device on it, I'm going to jail. Counting drinks is like, you know, this is futile exercise. It's not going to make any difference whatsoever. But I think I'm getting away with something. I'm living in that place my mom used to live, you know, that state of denial. So I'm still drinking to blackout when I get home, because when I leave the club, it's not enough. And I remember a couple of times getting home. There's beer in the refrigerator, and there's my favorite tequila sitting on the counter. Not enough, wondering how I'm going to get through the night. Wake up the next morning, and the bottle's got a little bit more in it than what it had the night before. But there's an empty one sitting next to it, and a receipt for me having driven to the liquor store and not remembering that I had polished off the one bottle and got behind the wheel and drove in a blackout to the liquor store to get some more. So the court had ordered me to start going to AA. And being the good liar that I was, I forged many a signature on that card to say that I had gone to meetings. And the easier, softer way for me was always to just lie about it. And it was pretty easy, because at that point, 38 years of lying to everybody else, the person I was the best at lying to was me. I was buying into all these lies. And I guess my higher power decided that it was time for me to get a wake-up call. So 3.5 or 4 months into my probation, I get a new probation officer. And he just came out of the military with a 20-year career as a military police officer. And the first thing he told me was, I hope you've been going to these AA meetings. So where's this one? And he starts asking me where the meetings are. I see you've been going to you know, to Hope Group. Where's that one? Well, that's in Cedar Park by my house, sir. Luckily, I had actually gone to one or two of these meetings and found out that there was a whole bunch of alcoholics and drug addicts that went to those meetings, but I wasn't one of them. And so he starts to ask me, and of course, I lie to him and tell him, yes, sir, I've been going. And he says, well, you're going to, I sure hope so, because I'm going to start calling some of these numbers here to make sure that you've been going. So I decide it's a really good idea if I start going to AA meetings. And a friend of mine had gotten sober about 6 years previous, and he was telling me about this really good group called Allendale, and they meet at noon. And I was like, man, if Miles liked that, it's got to be good. Number one, it's at noon, so it's not going to mess with my happy hour. This is really good. There's nothing worse than going into an AA meeting drunk, right? And number two, if Miles liked it, there's got to be a bunch of good-looking girls there. So this is going to be awesome. I'm going to go to Allendale. So I start going there, and I can't put down the marijuana. And so I decide that, I'm going to at least start going. And I'm listening to everybody's stories. And just like when I was a kid and I knew that my dad had a problem with alcohol, and I thought, I'm smarter than him. I'll be able to handle it. I'll know when to quit. I listened to everybody's story in those meetings, and I kept thinking to myself, man, you're in the right spot. It's a good thing you're here, because, man, you're an alcoholic. Because I'm listening to their stories, and all I can hear is the differences. I see no similarities. Well, let me tell you, there's a ton of similarities. You guys are probably out there right now going, dude, you're in the right spot, man. After hearing my story, you're probably going, wow, how did you get sober without going to treatment? Like five times. So my second wake-up call was going in, I think it was my fifth, it was my fifth month going into the probation officer, going for my probation meeting, and I handed in my sheet and was super happy that, I could honestly say I had gone to every one of these meetings that I'm handing this sheet over. He says, oh, that's awesome. He says, do you need to go to the bathroom? And I'm like, that's a weird question. Well, I know. No, I don't. He says, okay, well, we'll hang around until you do. Let me get you a bunch of water. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, when's the last time I got high? And it was about 10 days. And I'm like, this would be no problem. Problem. So he walks into the restroom with me, and I do the deed and fill the cup and set it on the counter. And, of course, it starts to change color. And he starts to kind of get a little irritated. This isn't looking good. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. He says, yeah, well, this is looking really bad. And I'm like, well, I was at a party last week with some friends, and they were, of course, because I'm going to lie. If my lips were moving, there was probably a lie coming out. And I don't know why. I have no clue why. But he looked at me and he said, Mr. Garcia, I really want to see you make it. I'm not vindictive. I'm not a, I get young ones in here. I won't tell you what I want to say. Anyway, what he's telling me, he's not a hard case. And he says that he wants me to get this thing. And he said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this. And he said, what you're going to do is take that cup and you're going to pour it into the toilet and you're going to throw the cup in the trash. He says, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go type into the computer that you passed your UA. And he said, you're going to come in next month and we're not going to have this problem again. And I said, yes, sir, you got that right. We're not going to have this problem again. And that was the first time in my life that I ever tried to quit honestly. I really gave it an honest try, because consequences were getting ready to start coming fast and furious. And I didn't like that one night I spent in jail, and I sure didn't want to make the habit of spending more. So that's when I realized that I was powerless. I was truly powerless. I couldn't do it. And I was driving, it was a Thursday, and I was driving by where the Allendale meets. And I hadn't gone in that week to get my report card signed. And I didn't have it with me. It was at home. So I thought to myself, well, I'll just come in tomorrow. I'll come back Friday, and I'll get it signed. And I'm sure this didn't happen, but in my mind, it did. As I was driving by the meeting place, the light in front of me that's right there at next to the parking lot went from green, not to yellow, to red. It went from green to red. And so I stopped. And as I'm sitting there uncomfortably waiting for this light to turn green that just mistakenly turned red, I'm waiting, and it won't turn green. And I decided, wow, you know, I really should go to the meeting today. And so I pulled in. And I went in, and the guy who was asked to read how it works said, hey, you know, guys, and that meeting's pretty crowded. There's usually about 80 to 100 people there at noon. It can get real crowded in the big room. And he said, can you guys give me your attention? He said, well, you normally read this, and y'all are chit-chatting and talking to each other, and we read through this real fast. And he said, you know, this is a really powerful reading, and I'd like to read it very slow. I'd like you guys to pay attention to it. And as you all probably know it by heart, if you don't, I recommend you learn it. He started to read it very slowly, and rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not cover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. And that got me, honesty, three times. And I listened to the rest of it, but I didn't have to hear a whole bunch more than that. And the topic that day that the chairperson decided was going to be a good topic was rigorous honesty. And I thought that was quite odd. Why would you have to put the word rigorous in front of honesty? And for the first time, I listened. For the first time, I found myself interested in what every single person that shared that day had to say. And for the first time, I saw myself and I saw the dishonesty. And every single person that shared that day was talking right to my heart. And I left the meeting that day, cried in my car for about a half an hour before I could drive away. And I came back in on that Friday because I still had to get my report card signed. And the topic of the meeting on the second day on that Friday was acceptance. And again, everybody spoke straight to me. Of course, I had drank that night. But as you all well know, when you start to really listen to the words of this program, it messes up your drinking. And so it didn't quite have the effect that it always did before. And that Friday night, I went home, and of course I drank that weekend again, and again it didn't have the same effect. And I started to think about, I started reflecting back on my life. And I started to think and look at myself in the mirror and ask myself if this was the person that I, not that I thought I would ever be, but is this the person that I want to be? So that Monday I went in and the topic was willingness. And, you know, reflecting back on that, it had to have been divine intervention because I needed those three meetings and I needed those three topics and I needed it in that exact order for me to be able to make a decision to do something different in my life. And the next day was June the 2nd of 2017 and my daughter was going to turn 24 years old that next day. And my daughter had never seen her dad not drinking or getting high. My daughter had never seen her dad sober. My daughter had never seen her dad not selfish, self-centered, and self-seeking, and worried more about what I could give to her and to other people than I could to myself. And so I hit my knees that night. And I prayed for the first time in a long time. And the thing that I asked for was willingness. I just wanted to be willing. And apparently he answered the prayer because I have been clean and sober since June 2nd of 2017. So... I'd love to tell you about how I worked the steps. I've learned a lot about myself in this program. I've learned a lot about how the program works. I will just tell you this, that those 12 steps are a treasure map. They are not the treasure. Recovery is not the treasure. Being connected to a higher power that every single one of you has, and you have it right here in that spot that none of us want to look, because when we look there we find our character defects too, and it's dark right there, and it's a place that for most of my life I was scared to death to go. Not only was the problem there, but the solution was there. And I'm glad that I was able to do that. A little honesty, a little acceptance, and a little willingness goes a long way. Thank you guys for letting me share.